This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Each and every day here on the Jeff Calkins Show, we welcome Chris Harrington in the program. Chris, what are we listening to?
It is Toxic, of course, by Britney Spears, in honor of tonight's Grizzlies opponents, the Phoenix Suns, who, according to some reports, have a, quote, toxic locker room, although Kevin Durant has rolled his eyes at those reports.
We will get into the Grizzlies tonight. They have two more games before the All-Star break. They will take on Phoenix tonight. You can hear pregame at 8:30 right here on 99 FM ESPN. Tip off with Eric at 9, and then the Grizzlies will also take on the Clippers before the All-Star break. But over at the Daily Memphian, Chris has got his latest piece, Resetting the Grizzlies Roster and Reassessing the West Post-Trade Deadline. Before we get into specifics, do you think that there is a big picture question about the Grizzlies figuring out who fits where and in what slots for the rotation the rest of the way?
Yeah. There's a big picture question that's made up of a few smaller questions that make that up. But I do think it's sort of the overarching sort of point I was making in the piece is that, you know, they got 30 games now to go. It's sort of weird. You got two games now, and then you're going to have the All-Star break, and then you come back. But the trade deadline is sort of where you basically know what your roster is, other than a little buyout stuff. And you know where you are in the standings. So this last 30 games is, to me, is a two-pronged thing. It's about competing for playoff positioning, obviously, but it's also about just trying to fine-tune your roster and figure out who you're playing, where you're playing them, when you're playing them, and all of that. You know, it's time to start honing in on what you're going to be when the playoffs come.
I think that's kind of the bigger question. It's like, do the Grizzlies at this point have role questions beyond, I think, the obvious, as you point out, Ja Morant, Desmond Bane, Jaren Jackson Jr.? We know what those roles are. Do we feel confident that we know roles beyond that?
Well, they're starting two rookies, and teams that – and I did some research about this earlier in the season, and I ended up not writing it yet because Drew was doing a big piece on Zach Edey. So sometime in the next few weeks, I'm going to do a Zach Edey-Jalen Wells combo piece. But, like, I tried to look at, like, teams starting rookies who make playoff runs, like, get past the first round. And there are very few examples in the last 10 or 15 years of any rookie starters on teams that make playoff runs. And there are zero examples of two, like none. And so, like, you know, like Chet Holmgren last year, but A, he was a rookie, but it was his second year as a rookie. And he was a second overall pick. And that team is the one seed lost in the second round. And so there are just not a lot of examples of rookie starters on teams that make playoff runs. And the Grizzlies are now starting two rookies. So that's a big question. Now, it makes sense, I think, to start those two rookies. Like, they're playing well. They fit into the roles alongside the three stars that you want players to play. Like, there's not necessarily anyone else on the roster who fits the role better than those two players. But are they still going to be starting come playoff time? And beyond whether they're still starting, because I think the bigger issue is not the starting, it's the total minutes and who's playing in certain parts of the game. are their roles going to diminish in the playoffs? And so like who's taking those spots, whether it's starting or total minutes or what have you. So I think that the fact that they're starting two rookies is a first place to look.
If you presume health, do you think that Vince would end up taking Jalen Wells' spot on the as a starter?
Yeah, I can see a situation where like Jalen Wells is still a nominal starter, but like you know you go to Vince faster, right?
Yeah,
like Manu Ginobili came off the bench for the Spurs, and so that's why the starting thing is, you know, I'm a little reticent on that. But I think Vince is going to be the primary wing, not Jalen Wells. Whether he's starting or not, I think he's going to be the primary wing come playoff time. And I really think the front court, and I've been saying this all season, it's going to be a question of matchup because Zach Edey, Santi Aldama, Brandon Clark are all so different from each other. And what works in one matchup won't necessarily work in the other. But I think it is likely that either Aldama or Brandon Clark becomes your primary front court companion, whether that's in the starting lineup or not. I think it's going to shift towards Vince Williams and either Santi or Brandon Clark come playoff time.
Let's take the Vince Jalen. What do you gain and what would you give up by effectively making that move?
Vince is a little bit older. I mean, Vince has not played a lot of NBA games. Is that much difference in the games they've played?
Yeah.
But you gain experience in other ways than playing games. That sort of brings up the Chet Holmgren thing. Right? He'd been on NBA team for a full year even though he was hurt, right? So he was around the team. He was benefiting from the coaching. And Vince Williams' case, like he's had injury stuff, but a lot of the time he spent not playing, he has not been injured. Like his rookie year, he wasn't really injured. He was just like on the bench, like not playing, but that means he was in practices. He was in the play groups. He was in all this other stuff. So I think, you know, a third-year pro player has more experience than a first-year pro player, even beyond the game's played contrast. And then he's also a little bit older. He's also just more physical. And I think the playoff basketball gets physical. And Jalen Williams is a guy who is really stuck with his man defensively. He's good at navigating screens. But Vince Williams, I think, is a little bit more prepared for the physicality of playoff basketball. And I think when the heat turns up, I'm super impressed with Jalen Wells. But I have a little more faith in Vince Williams to be there for it when it gets really physical and the heat really turns up in the playoffs.
All right, let's talk about the front court. Before we talk about options, how would you assess what you've seen from Zach Edey through, you know, roughly a little more than half of the season, despite the fact he's been banged up?
I mean, he's been inconsistent, which you would expect. That's sort of normal for a rookie. I think he is not – there's the issue with his hands. Like, he has trouble catching the ball sometimes. You hope that will get better. There's no guarantee that it will. You will hope it will. The other thing is I want to see him more aggressive. I see him trying to lay stuff up that he should be dunking. You know, just like go hard and either get the dunk or get fouled. I want to see him play with a little bit more force offensively, especially with more consistency. I think defensively, the numbers on him team-wise are good, but I think you watch that OKC game, you think about playoff basketball, I think there's going to be more of a focus on exploiting him defensively in a playoff series than there is game-to-game in the regular season. And so I would worry that the defensive stuff that's been okay in the regular season is going to be a bigger issue in the playoffs. And that's why I think, you know, he is more likely to be a situational player in the playoffs this season. And then you hope, you know, a year from now when he's got more experience, he's more than that. But right now, I we'll see what the matchups bring. But I just feel like Santi Aldama, Brandon Clark is where it's naturally going to go in the playoffs.
I told George this, I think it was off the air yesterday. The thing that kind of stands out when I'm watching Edey is I feel like he's thinking as he's going through. And not that thinking is quote-unquote a bad thing, but it just doesn't feel like he's playing free. You know what I mean? It feels like he's almost doing like a checklist in his head.
Yeah, no, I think that's not uncommon for a rookie especially. In even though he is a guy who is more experienced than most rookies, that's college basketball experience. That's not NBA experience. And he has been asked to change his game and change his approach and adapt more in terms of role, in terms of pace, in terms of where he's in a team pecking order. The level of adjustment he's had to make from college to NBA is more profound than most players, I think. and then he's missed a lot of games. And so I think, you know, he didn't play much against OKC. He wasn't there long enough, you know. But before that, he had a nice stretch. He had like three or four double doubles in a row. I do think John Morant being back is good for Zach Edey. I just think, and you want to see him, you know, be more consistent, more aggressive, whatever, the rest of the way. I'm just not convinced that his potential playoff role, as we think of it today, is going to be broadly different 30 games from now.
Okay, and then going to the other questions in the front court, what, how do you kind of see it playing out if we make the assumption that Edie's going to be more of a spot player or, you know, situational? What's kind of the decision tree of whether or not you give more minutes to Santi or more minutes to Brandon?
Well, or both. And I think that's one thing that's going to be interesting to watch, is that they've been doing this, and Taylor Jenkins has been going out of his way to talk about this. So I think they really want to take a more of a look at Santi at the three. And what that really means is Santi at the three, for the most part. I think what that's going to mean is Santi at the three with Brandon and Jaren, not Santi at the three with like Jaren and Edie, right? So I think they're going to look at lineups where they put all three of those guys on the floor. And the fact that, you know, you're pretty young on the wing and no one's really established, I think gives you more reason to want to try to do that and to see what that looks like. I think Brandon Clark has been important for this team in playoff basketball. I mean, he was huge in the one series they've won in this era against Minnesota. Like, people in Minnesota, like Chris Finch, is still talking about how Brandon Clark gave them problems 3 years ago in a playoff series. Brandon Clark's just about, is he healthy? Does he have enough pop to come playoffs? So that's been a little up and down this season. But when Brandon Clark is healthy, I think he just fits really well. And we've seen that he is able to switch out and defend on the perimeter and react on the fly to stuff defensively, which I think is crucial in playoff basketball. And he's going to be able to do that in a way that Edie and both Aldama are not. And so I think Brandon Clark is really important. And if you can play him, Santi, and Jaren together for stretches, the fact that Jaren and Brandon can switch all over the place and defend all over the floor, I think that helps you get by with Santi defensively in that role, because at least he's big, right? At least he gives you some length. He can help on the boards and stuff like that.
Yeah, I almost just wonder, though, it's like, it almost feels like it's going to largely be dictated by what does the situation call for? Do they need more defense? If they need more defense, it almost feels like, okay, you go with Brandon, but if you need more offense, you go with Santi. Is the calculus going to be that simple at times?
Yeah, I mean, if you're wanting, do you feel like you need to spread out and play five out offensively? Or is it a situation where the other team was just clogging the paint so much and keeping John Morant away from the rim that you really need to spread out? If you want to play five out, you're going to be playing Jaren and Santi at the front court spots, and then you're going to have either Luke Kennard or Jalen Williams or Vince Williams, one of those three, at the three, and you can play five out with those lineups. You can't really do that with Brandon Clark. You obviously can't do that with Zach Edey. Zach Edey's a better 3-point shooter than Brandon Clark, by the way, but still, you can't really do that. So I think if you want to really spread out offensively, you're going to play Santi at the four and Jaren at the five. But I think they're going to look at playing Santi at the three with Jaren and Brandon and giving them just sort of more size across the totality of the lineup. I think they're going to experiment with that. Now, if the experiments go wrong, maybe you don't see that in the playoffs, but I think they really, really want to get a look at that.
I assume another thing they want to get a look at, because Zach Kleiman said it as much, is they want to get a look at Gigi. What are kind of the questions that you think that they'll be exploring with Gigi?
Yeah, I wrote a little bit about this in the piece yesterday. To me, Gigi is in the category with Jalen Wells and Zach Edey and Scottie Pippen. I put him in the group of players who they are very young, they have no playoff experience, and to me, even though two of those four players are starting, to me, they are not absolute locks for the playoff rotation. Now, I think Jalen Wells is pretty close to that. But with Gigi, the thing I think people miss with Gigi, if you're just sort of watching the games more casually, is that the team defense has really suffered with him on the floor. He gets buckets, but the team defense points allowed per 100 possessions is if you look at every individual player and what is the team defensive performance when they're on the floor, Gigi Jackson's is the worst on the team, and it's not even close. And I think, you know, past performance does not guarantee future results. You're playing him because you expect that will get better over time. And so at some point, you know, you're not going to worry about what has happened before today. You're going to worry about what happens going forward. But I think over these next 30 games, he's going to be in the rotation. They're going to give him minutes, and they're going to be watching to see if the team defense improves. And if it improves, I think G.G. Jackson will be a factor in the playoffs. If it doesn't, there's a chance he's not in the rotation in the playoffs. I think you have to be able to – your defense can't fall apart. And so the thing to watch for with G.G. these next 30 games is not like whether his shots are going in. The number one thing to look for is the team doing okay defensively in his minutes. That's really the thing with him.
What type of role do you expect Marvin Bagley III to have? I guess if he even has one.
None, really. It's sort of too bad. I actually think this is a good place for him to try to like rejuvenate his career a little bit, in the sense that, like, if you think about the kind of player he is, yeah,
he offers something that they don't like have. You know what I mean?
Well, an up tempo above the rim front court guy playing with John Morant, like. Playing with John Morant in this system is great for Marvin Bagley, but how often is that going to happen? You know, I mean,
right.
When you're talking about, like, he's injured right now, he comes back, they got 25 games to go. They already got five front court players, including Jay Huff, right? They got five front court players who have been playing well. They're in a playoff race. Like, this is not some lost season where, well, let's throw him out there and see what he looks like. I think with Marvin Bagley, it's mostly going to be a garbage time guy, which means he's not going to be playing with John Morant. And so I think it's important for Bagley to impress behind the scenes, to impress in practices and in the so-called play groups and his interaction with the coaches and stuff like that, and to give the team a sense of, you know what, we might actually have something with this guy.
Well, let's give it a shot. Why not?
Maybe we bring him back in a cheap contract and he gets to play with John next season, and maybe suddenly, like, you know, we've done it again, right? We found this guy like Jay Huff or Scottie Pippen or whatever that, you know, wasn't working out, and then we bring him here and we rehab him and something great happens. I think that's possible. I think the Grizzlies could talk themselves into that being possible. I just don't think there's enough time and enough situation, because they're in a playoff race, to find that out in NBA games the rest of the way, I would suspect.
Could you see a scenario like this where, let's say, Zach continues to be inconsistent, that, you know, in that final 20-25 games that he could potentially play, could you see where they're like, all right, let's see what we got and throw it in there and kind of experiment? Like, could you envision actually happens?
Maybe there's a game where, like, things just aren't working out and it gets away from you. Like, say, a game like against Oklahoma City when you're down 28 in the third quarter, right? And like, maybe there's going to be nights like that, maybe. Maybe it's not like that. You'll throw a changeup out there. The problem is, again, like, Jay Huff is not playing at all.
Yeah.
And we've seen all season Jay Huff just come out and, like, and just start just slinging three-pointers in, like, you know, one after the other, and blocking shots and dunking all over the place. And, like, they have a guy out of the rotation who can, like, you know, who's a good break-in-case-of-emergency guy already. And so I'm not saying nothing, it can't happen, but I'm just skeptical about the opportunity and actual games coming for Marvin Bagley, given the team situation right now. That's why I think, you know, it's important for him what he's doing and things that we don't get to see.
Oftentimes when you cover one team, you can focus on the warts that a team has relative to, you know, others that are just kind of flying in and watching. Across the NBA, do you feel like the Grizzlies have more roster questions than potential playoff contenders, or, you know, threats to possibly win the conference? Do you feel like that they have more, less, or kind of on par with what everyone else is going through?
I think it's probably more in a lot of cases, because, I mean, sort of three things. One, their ostensible best player, I mean, we know this season it's been Jaren, but their ostensible best player is Ja Morant, and he's been super inconsistent both in terms of availability and performance, and I think that that's a big thing right now. You know, you got more questions about Ja Morant than Nikola Jokic, right?
If you look
at the second and third seeds in the West right now. I think the Grizzlies have benefited from their depth all season, but that depth has been a 1-15 depth, and 1-15 depth doesn't matter in the playoffs. And so when you narrow that down, now you're looking at, okay, what about the fourth and fifth guys? That's where the Grizzlies are weakest relative to other good teams in the league, is the quality of like the fourth and fifth. Because who are they, right? Right now, it's two rookies you're starting. So I think there's real questions about the middle of the roster, and the middle of the roster matters more in the playoffs probably than the regular season, where you can go deeper. And then they're still just so young. They just keep being young. And I think in this case, it's been more accidental. You know, people have said, you know, Zach Kleinman said, you know, why we shouldn't have tripled down on Houston, and then they went and did it again. Well, that was kind of an accident, because they went out to get Marcus Smart and it didn't work out. And then, like, you draft Jalen Williams in the second round with no idea that he's going to play. Like, that wasn't the plan for him to be starting for you. And then it just sort of happened. So it's been a little more accidental this time around. But that's still what's happened. And so they're still super young in terms of their supporting cast.
And then I keep coming back to this, though. How much gets solved if Ja, Jaren, and Dez, let's say they play, I don't know, what's the number, 60% of the games the rest of the way together, and they all play like top 25, 30 players? Like, how much gets solved just by that?
And really, I mean, it's just as making my job. Like if, I mean, you want the others too, and you know, but I'm sort of assuming the others, unless something goes haywire. Because Jaren has been awesome all season. He hasn't missed a game since game two.
Yeah.
Dez had this little injury, but he came right back from it, and he was like, you know, pretty good in the OKC game relative to other players. But it's Ja. Like, are you going to get the Ja who, at one point, I don't remember exactly what it was. I've read about it in the past. But at one point, Ja, maybe he still does. He had like two of the five highest playoff scoring games ever by players 22 and younger.
Yeah.
Like two of them. Like that guy who is like just exploding in playoff basketball, you know, against Utah the first time they got there. And then again, against Golden State, and you know, just putting the team on his back when they're down, you know, 2-1 at home or whatever, that Minnesota series. And it's been 3 years since we've seen that guy in, like, you know, in playoff basketball like that, and he hasn't quite looked like that this season. So that's, to me, we spent a lot of time talking about all this other stuff, which is important, but it's kind of not as important if the main thing doesn't
right.
work out. And the main thing is Ja Morant being Ja Morant.
You and I were included in a X thread yesterday that hypothesized part of the problem Ja's having is post-All-Star game last year, when clearly they started officiating the game a little bit more differently, particularly in the paint, allowing it to be more physical. Ja's out with the shoulder injury and hasn't made an adjustment. That's the theory, at least. How much stock do you put into it?
Oh, I think that's a reasonable theory, definitely. I think clearly one of the issues Ja's been having is that he feels like he is not getting calls, and he is expressing that disappointment. And I think that probably has a spiraling effect, both in terms of the quality of his own play and maybe even in the quality of the officiating he gets, if they're sick of hearing about it.
Sure.
My general like ethos in basketball is that when you drive to the paint, you expect to get hit, and your goal is not to draw a foul. Your goal is to make the shot. And like, whether the referees call it or not, like I'm not, you know, the idea of like trying to draw fouls is to me like just not how I think about basketball. Like, you know, take the contact and finish the play. And if you don't finish the play, it's on you, even if you get fouled. That's sort of my attitude about it. And so I don't have a lot of patience for, like, whining about officiating.
Yes.
And I think we've seen too much of Ja this year of he doesn't get the call early. He stops to look at the official while play is still happening. And then it seems to impact the quality of his play going forward. And I think that is an adjustment needs to happen. And that adjustment primarily needs to come from Ja himself, not from the officials.
Go ahead.
Yeah, no. So I you know, I don't know if all that is accurate, but I think it certainly could be.
All right, we got Phoenix tonight. Honestly, one of the more underrated kind of fun games of the year. This was over, I think, the holiday break, where the Grizzlies were in Phoenix and got a big road win. What are you kind of looking for tonight? What are you expecting?
It's on TNT. It's a national TV game. Kevin Durant, I think, is going to be back. He's missed the last few games with a sprained ankle. He has, I think, been cleared for tonight. Phoenix is like a starry team, but they haven't been very good. They're basically a 500 team. You've got Kevin Durant and Devin Booker, who can each just go off on any given night. They're super talented scorers, but the rest of that team is just not good. And the Grizzlies won in Phoenix a month or so ago in a game where like half their roster was out, including John Morant and like half the other guys. Like Colin Castleton was in the rotation that night. And so you don't take anything for granted. You're on the road and Kevin Durant's on the other team. But like this is a game, if you're not looking ahead to the playoff of the All-Star break, you have all your guys. This is a time to start getting serious. This should be a game that the Grizzlies can come in and win. The Suns are a bad defensive team, one of the worst in the league. The Grizzlies are one of the best offensive teams in the league. It'd be nice to see the offense really get humming tonight.
Did you happen to catch any of Luka's Laker debut?
No, I don't have ESPN.
I got
the TNT games because they're on HBO Max. I don't have the ESPN games. So I saw some clips. And I looked at the box score. He didn't have like the best Luka night, but like you know, whatever. They won the game. They're playing against Utah. I have no reason to think that Luka won't be awesome for the Lakers, just like he was awesome for the Mavs. Unfortunately,
how much did it surprise you that the Connect Mark Williams trade fell through?
It surprised me a little bit just because that doesn't happen very often. I mean, there were reasons to wonder. I mean, Mark Williams is a guy who's missed more games than he's played in three seasons. So obviously there were medical issues there. But you know there are medical issues when you make the trade. Like, you know the game's played. Like, that's not a secret. And, I mean, my conspiracy theory, which I suggested a little bit yesterday, was like, that the Lakers didn't really want to give up that pick for him, but they wanted to seem like they were, catering to Luka a little bit.
So yeah, or at least like, hey, we're trying to get a big.
Well, we tried, but look what happened now. And so, I don't know. I'm a little surprised. It sounds like Charlotte has not given up the fight on that one quite yet. They're appealing.
I wonder
to the
why.
NBA. But it would be a little weird. Not only is like a trade getting rescinded for a failed physical rarer still is the NBA making you do the trade anyway after you rescinded it. I don't know if that's ever happened before, so that would be interesting.
Could have some unprecedented NBA activity. All right, Chris, we appreciate it, my man.
All right, thanks.
Chris Harrington of the Daily Memphian. Go read his post-trade deadline primer over at the Daily Memphian. We come back. It's Fish on Friday on Tuesday. Charles Fishman joins the program next. Stick around. You're listening to the Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Charles Fishman is our man in Washington, D.C. He's also the author of 3 New York Times bestsellers. He's a 3-time winner of the Gerald Loeb Award for Excellence in Business Writing. He's a retired Mississippi tugboat deckhand. You can also follow him on Twitter on X at C Fishman. Charles, good day, sir.
Good morning. Good morning to you and everybody in Memphis.
All right, Charles, it turns out, I hope you're sitting down for this, a lot of us watched the Super Bowl.
Well, it was a big Super Bowl. It's going to turn out, for those who may not know, it's going to turn out to be the single most watched TV show of any kind in U.S. history, according to the early preliminary ratings. Okay, there's 333 million people in the United States, and of course, lots of people outside the U.S. watched the Super Bowl, but just for benchmark, 333 million Americans. Fox reports that 126 million people watch the Super Bowl on average at any given moment, 126 million across all platforms, including Spanish language broadcasts, Tubi, that terrible ad for the streaming service. And that is 2% up from last year. And last year's Super Bowl was the highest rated, the most watched. There's a difference between highest rated and most watched, but the most number of people in history watched last year's Super Bowl. And so this will be the highest, not athletic contest of any kind. The high of the ratings, the peak moment when people were watching, do you have a guess of what quarter the peak came in this year?
I'm going to say in the second quarter before halftime.
You're exactly right.
Yeah.
The high was 135.7 million, 136 million, so up 10 million from the average between 8 and 8:15. People were joking about whether you get a discount on your $8 million ad slot if it came in the middle of the fourth quarter when everybody had tuned out. It will turn out to be the most watched streaming live event as well. 14.5 million people watched on streaming. That would make the streaming alone one of the top 100 broadcasts, one of the top 100 shows in the country. So lots of people watch on streaming, although only about 10%, right,
yep,
of people were watching on streaming. There's a couple other items to clean up from the Super Bowl. We ate 1.47 billion chicken wings.
I did my
Sunday
part.
How many did you have?
I had five whole wings.
Five whole wings. What did I have? I bought 15 and I ate, I ate eight. but it was my only food. I didn't have pizza.
I wish I could say the same. I cannot.
I wanted to try wings. We both well exceeded not the average, but 1.47 billion wings is four for every man, woman, and child. If you just do the 126 million people who watched, though, let's do some quick math. Then it was 11 wings on average. So we were under.
Well, I never know when we say 11 wings, are we saying party wings? Are we saying whole wings?
You know, whatever. I went to Wingo's. I bought actual wings from an actual place. I'll be honest, they were a little disappointing.
You got to imagine they were probably just cooking all day.
Well, you walked in there, it was insane.
Yeah.
Literally, they had three rows of tables, four-person tables pushed together, so three or four in a row, four rows, every single table covered with shopping bags filled with to-go orders. It was like a wing factory. Anyway, I'm going back to my pizza place. My local pizza place does great wings. So whatever. But they offered me flat wings, which are the traditional wings, or just drumettes. And I just thought, you get more chicken on a drumette. So I did only drumettes. But
easier to dunk, too.
Huh?
They're easier to dunk as well.
They are easier to dunk. I missed the variety of which you're picking. So I'm just going back to the non-wing place next year. Anyway, the thing that I was so struck by, for some reason, no one has seemed to notice. Matthew McConaughey.
Oh, your boys noticed.
My boys. Who's my boy?
Me.
Oh.
We've gotten a buffet-size helping of McConaughey right now in the commercials.
He was in three of the 59 ads. He personally was in almost 10% of the ads. We can all agree that Matthew McConaughey could take the rest of the year off, starting on February 9th. He was in two ads for Salesforce, which haven't gotten much attention. One.
Well, we've already seen them.
Not in the sense of we've seen them.
They were released online. You know, not like Tim has pointed out that some companies do. They just ran one of those Salesforce. The one in the rain with Woody Harrelson
is an old.
That one's been running on football games for at least a month, if not more.
Okay, that's interesting. Well, he was in three ads. And then, of course, he was in the Uber Eats ad. Each of the Salesforce ads was only 30 seconds. And maybe that's why they didn't get much attention, because they were pre-existing ads. And then he was in the legendary Uber Eats ad. And our man, Tim Calkins, from Northwestern University Kellogg School, I specifically queried him. He said he doesn't believe there's ever been an actor who is the central character in three Super Bowl ads. So there you go. I couldn't believe it. I was like, boy, I guess you have to be Matthew McConaughey to get that gig. But that was a nice gig.
I kind of had a working theory on this. McConaughey's getting a little bit older. He's got a younger family. And I think most people would tell you the work you can get on commercials, good work. And I think this is kind of like him, like, he moved to Austin. He's out of L.A., so this is kind of like him, like, all right, I'm going to go get some paychecks, but I'm also going to be able to go watch my Longhorns go on a playoff run.
Well, I mean, that's an interesting point, right? He probably gets a lot of input on the ads. All three ads are really funny, right?
Yes.
They play to his personality. And from what I read, he earned $10 million for the Salesforce ads. So you think about the paycheck for those two ads versus the paycheck for even, you know, a movie with a middle-sized budget, and it's not, you know, you might earn $10 million for 2 months of work instead of $10 million for 2 days of work. And I don't do what he does. I would not have felt myself compromised. He was himself in all those ads. They played him.
No, he's been doing the Uber spots, the Uber Eats spots all year. I've actually enjoyed them. Like, that football's just mind tricking us into eating, because guess what I do during football?
That was very funny. All three of them were funny. And yeah, you know, we don't have sympathy for the big stars very often, but he has got bills to pay as well.
We all do. Okay. The other topic that came up during the Super Bowl, because maybe it wasn't much of a game. The President of the United States was tweeting about the penny. This is something, a topic that you have been discussing well in advance, of the President getting from it.
Listeners know.
Yes, the real ones know.
What is coming over the horizon? Just listen to the segment.
Yep.
So first of all, let's say the following sentence. President Trump is right. He is right about the penny.
We have breaking news.
At least that sentence coming from
yes.
me is breaking news.
We'll get that drop for you.
I happen to have, in our house, we collect pennies in a ceramic item that one of our kids made, and we happen to have, it had filled beyond full, I had 18.3 pounds of coins waiting to go to the little counting machine at the grocery store. And they'd been sitting in a mini shopping bag near the door for probably since Thanksgiving when I emptied out the container. And I just thought, this is the moment to take in the coins and see how many pennies I had in my house. This accounts for almost every single penny in the house. So I took my 18 pounds of coins to the Coinstar at our local Giant grocery store. And I love feeding them into that machine. The Coinstar counting machines are kind of fun if you have coins sitting around. And here is the data. We had 946 pennies.
You were above average, according to Jeff. I think the average was like 700 or something.
Jeff kind of did the math wrong. We'll get to that in a minute. I also had 269 quarters. The pennies were worth $9.46. The quarters were worth $67.
There you go.
In total, the 18 pounds of coins was worth $138.16. Very nice. Coinstar took $18.41. So you lose more. You lose basically 15%, which feels like a lot. I used to roll these coins by hand.
We had the good old fashioned those plastic things that had like the rows like for your pennies
Right?
Oh yeah.
And then you stack them up and then you put them in the paper
rolls.
Yeah. This is both more fun but also more expensive. Anyway, Jeff said the average house had 700 pennies. In fact, on average, per household, there are 700 pennies out in the world. But of course, a lot of those pennies are in banks or they're at stores. Here's some of the numbers. We made 3.2 billion pennies last year, which cost $200 million to manufacture, 3 cents a penny, 3 cents for a penny that's only worth one penny. That's why it's time to get rid of them. But here's the other reason that it's time to get rid of them. We have to make 3.2 billion pennies every year because of all the currency, the $20 bill, the $100 bill, the quarter, the nickel. Only the penny really doesn't circulate. And so the mint has to replace all the pennies that are in circulation every year because people just take their pennies and they dump them in a little cup or they do what we do, dump them in some big ceramic mug. And the pennies are never in your pocket. The pennies are just considered a hassle. So there's two interesting polls. In 2015, Harris did a poll, and they just said, do you support or oppose eliminating the penny? 51% opposed eliminating the penny. That was just 10 years ago. And 29% supported it. Data for Progress, a polling organization, did a poll just a few years ago, and 61% support eliminating the penny. But in the Data for Progress poll, they told each of the people they interviewed that the penny cost more to produce than it was worth. Just giving people that one piece of information literally doubles the support for eliminating the penny. So it's time. It costs more to produce the penny than it's worth 19 years in a row. So there you go. I'm ready. There's the funniest tidbit I found out. Chipotle, of all places, got tired of the penny all the way back in 2012. They did not want to handle pennies in their stores. And so they rounded all their checks up to the nearest 5 cents just to make every transaction even. And they were busted doing it. And then they agreed.
I think when you say people that oppose it, I think that's why it is. It's not that people are sitting there going, oh, financially, we think this is a good business move. I think it's that everyone suspects if we get rid of the penny, then they're just going to start charging more.
Well, the most they'll charge is 2 cents or 3 cents. And probably the reason it hasn't been eliminated because metal makers, metal miners, zinc and copper miners want to continue to sell the metal to the mint. But the truth is people have been trying to eliminate the penny for 20 years. We eliminated the half-cent coin, which used to be as common as the penny, in 1857. So the penny's worth a lot less than the half-cent
coin. We're due for an elimination.
We're due.
All right, we got time, I think, for one more. You want to talk about SNL 50?
Yeah. Let's Saturday Night Live, celebrating its 50th anniversary this year. This is the 50th year, 50th season. And they're having a celebration show this Sunday, not on Saturday, from 8 to 11 p.m. I would suggest to you that there is no TV show in American history that's had the impact on American culture that SNL has had, specifically, of course, on comedy. Let's just tick off some of the people who've been on SNL. Start with the women. Tina Fey, not been on SNL, whose careers started on SNL. Tina Fey, Kristen Wiig, Maya Rudolph, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, Amy Poehler, Sarah Silverman. Those people aren't just comedians. They drive their producers, creators, writers. They drive the creation of comedy. On the male side, Adam Sandler, Eddie Murphy, Chris Rock, Chris Farley, Bill Murray, Jimmy Fallon, Martin Short, Will Ferrell, Pete Davidson, all started.
Chevy Chase is going to be very offended that you didn't mention it.
Chevy Chase. Mm-hmm. I was worried people wouldn't know in this audience who Chevy Chase is. Chevy Chase. Here's the first show was The first show was October 11th, 1975. It was hosted by George Carlin, who was then already a big comic. And debuting with that show, Dan Aykroyd, John Belushi, Chevy Chase, Jane Curtin, all people in the first
Gilda Radner.
Group of players. Gilda Radner, all people in the first group of players who went on to great careers. So incredible. Who's coming to the special? Bad Bunny, Miley Cyrus, all those people. All the people I mentioned are going to be there, but also who are still alive. Paul McCartney, Paul Simon, Steve Martin, Tom Hanks, Woody Harrelson. Just incredible. Just an incredible lineup. Who knows? You know, SNL often falls flat, right?
It's live comedy.
But an incredible impact. Lorne Michaels, the creator and executive producer, he started the show when he was 30, and he's 80. He's never really done anything else. What? It's just amazing. I graduated from high school in 79. Show started in 75. I remember in the 77-78 season, we would gather at somebody's house at 11:30 at night, whatever that was, the third or fourth season, to watch as a group of teenagers, you know, removed from our parents. So it was a cultural touchstone really, really, really early. So they are rebroadcasting the original first show this Saturday at 11:30 Eastern, which is when the show is broadcast. I think a lot of people watch it on YouTube now. That's what I do. And then the special from 8 to 11. It's with that many people, even 3 hours, it's going to be, you know, kind of a chaotic celebrity carnival. But I bet it's going to be a lot of fun.
Now, the thing that was depressing is I felt like, man, I remember watching the 40th thinking like, oh, yeah, like it's been 10 years. And I felt like the 40th was just about, you know, it felt like it was like 5 years ago. Nope, it's been 10.
Well, that's true, too. It's hard to believe it's been 50 years. But the impact of just a single show on the way, on the comedy we get, on the people who who are in Jimmy Fallon. Just think about the people who host. It's kind of amazing. It is kind of amazing. So I'll confess, I'm going to watch. You know, SNL is something a little bit like the Super Bowl, and that it is one of those a little bit common touchstones. You know,
totally
agree.
Millions
of people check out SNL every Saturday, even now, 50 years in.
All right, Charles, we appreciate it.
All right. Have a good week, ladies and gentlemen.
Charles Fishman, again, follow him on X at C Fishman. Here's what's coming up next on Jason and John. Jessica Benson's going to join their program. Cerrito will be with me today, Tim Murray tomorrow, so we're flipping that. We will be joined by Ken Wisenhunt of the Showboats today during hour number two. And Gabe will be here with us today. Don't know if we'll have Jeff because of the trial going on, but nonetheless, Gabe will be right here from 4 until 7. George, I appreciate your help, my man. We'll try to do better tomorrow, but we, for now, our work is done.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
This President's Day, upgrade the look of your home without breaking your budget. Save up to 50% site-wide on brand new window treatments now at Blinds.com. Blinds.com, the number one online retailer of custom window treatments, is the better way to give your home the presidential treatment. Blinds.com makes it easy with free virtual consultations on your schedule and samples delivered directly to your door, fast and free. Choose from trending woven wood shades or upgrade to motorized. Blinds.com has everything and more, all with upfront pricing and no hidden fees. Need help with installation? Blinds.com can handle it for you. Or DIY with expert guidance from our design pros. With over 25 million windows covered and our 100% satisfaction guarantee, you can count on Blinds.com to deliver results you'll love. Shop Blinds.com's President's Day Mega Sale right now and save up to 50% site-wide, plus a free professional measure. Up to 50% off site-wide at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
College holds a mythic place in American culture, but there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast. Available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.